Yes, Josh Graham has opinions.
That's right.
And yes, he's got attitude.
That's correct.
And that's exactly why you love him.
You wish I loved you that much.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
You are listening to a Wednesday Drive. And I want to talk about college football because things are very fluid, to say the least. But I've often said, in chaotic times, I think those who adapt are capable of doing amazing things. Like, I'm a history buff, and I've always been in awe reading about the World War II era, seeing what American businesses did. Companies you're talking about, like the Ford Motor Company, producing tanks at a rate we've never seen in the history of the world, not just America. And you've seen a lot of other great stories about how we came together post-Depression, won the war. I love history. I love reading about stuff like that. And this is going to be a history book type year. College football, it's been around for 150 years. Last year was the 150th season. I don't know if there's been a year where college football was halted altogether. The Big Ten, the Pac-12, they're not going to be playing this year. But the SEC, ACC, Big 12, as of right now, they're trying to push ahead. Other Group of Five conferences, the American, they're following suit. The Sun Belt, they said they're following what the SEC is going to do. In the SEC, or excuse me, the Sun Belt, you got Appalachian State, who I believe, through the chaos, has a tremendous opportunity in front of them to have a special year. Without the Big Ten and Pac-12, I think App State's easily a top 20 team in the country. The coaches poll was released last week. There were 9 Big Ten and Pac-12 schools in that preseason poll. You remove those teams, I already thought App State should have been ranked preseason. Without those 9 teams in the poll, without Ohio State, without Michigan, without Minnesota, without Iowa, without Southern Cal, without Oregon, without Utah, App State, they belong. They're a top 20 team. You look at this roster, you're talking about 13 wins and the similar infrastructures in place. I know you lose Eli Drinkwitz, but at this time last year, we were talking about how is Appalachian State going to replace Scott Satterfield? Many of the same guys on that team with Sat are still around. Zach Thomas is still playing quarterback for this team. This defense, still intact. Many of the weapons, still intact. The infrastructure's there. You got an App State guy who was under Sat and Eli and Sean Clark leading the way. So I feel great about it. This team won 13 games last year. Nobody wants to play them, which leads to where App State needs to be proactive. When I was in college, I remember being discouraged trying to become a sports broadcaster because the first class I went to, I think it was Comm 1000, there were easily 200 people in the class. It was one of those big lecture halls, and every single person I talked to, trying to make friends early on, I asked, hey, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to be a sports broadcaster. Oh, I want to be a sports broadcaster. Oh, I want to be the next Aaron Andrews. I want to be the next TV broadcast. You name it. That's what they wanted to do. So I thought, man, this is a congested field. I'm doing something poorly. I've made a big mistake. How am I going to stand out from everybody? Then I learned I didn't see any of those people from that class trying to get involved with the student television station and the student radio station and the newspaper and the yearbook, all of that. Turns out a lot of people thought, and this is the best advice I had to young people trying to do what I do. A lot of those people thought if they just get the degree, it was just going to happen for them. And it doesn't work out that way. App State, my advice to them right now, my advice to Doug Gillen, and I think he already knows this because we've talked about it, they need to be proactive. 8 games right now on a Sun Belt schedule. If you get all those games in, thank goodness, I will be happy we got a college football season. But this App State team can do greater things. So for right now, you have opportunity before you to try and land a Power 5 opponent on your schedule, given they want to play you. We've already seen North Carolina and Wake Forest and Duke veer away from playing Gap. Wake Forest preferred ODU versus the Mountaineers. Well, we'll see what happens now. ODU, they canceled their season earlier in the week, so I guess Wake Forest still has that slot available. App State, hey, they're right there, Wake Forest. You might have to do some schedule maneuvering to make that work, but that's still an option, technically. I don't think it's a coincidence. North Carolina and Duke preferred to play Charlotte over Appalachian State. I don't think that's a coincidence. But teams, they're trying to find opponents right now. With the MAC canceling over the weekend, Pittsburgh, they're looking for a team to open the year against. They were going to play Miami of Ohio. That would be a pretty good game for Appalachian State. The next week, Notre Dame, they were going to play Western Michigan. If they schedule the Irish and play in South Bend, that would be awesome for App State. The Big 12, they released their schedule today. Same format as the ACC, 9 conference games plus 1 non-conference game. They're all looking for opponents right now. App State, Doug Dillon should be on the phone with every single one of those commissioners to try and make that happen. They need to add something to their schedule because, fingers crossed, if there's a season, if App goes unbeaten, there should be no excuse for them not getting into the playoff. Before, when UCF went unbeaten, ran the table back-to-back years, it was, yeah, but there's 5 power conferences. How are we going to make room for a mid-major? Well, now there are 3 Power 5 conferences and 4 playoff spots. It would be hard to eliminate a group of 5 this year. It would be next to impossible unless there were multiple unbeaten group of 5s. See, while App wasn't ranked in the top 25 of that USA Today coaches poll, Cincinnati was. UCF was. UCF, if things hold true and those 9 teams that aren't playing just translate to those teams behind them moving up, UCF feasibly would be the 12th ranked team in America. And Cincinnati would be 13th. They're both in the American. If they go unbeaten, either one of them, they should get in over Appalachian State, unless App State can get a good out-of-conference opponent. Get a Big 12 school to play them. Get an ACC school to play them. I'm not saying it'll happen, but I think that's what needs to happen. The Mountaineers, they can't sit back like many of those students in my Com 1000 class thinking it's just going to happen. If you want this year to be special, it's right there in front of you to adapt, to try and get that done. So I think App State has a lot in front of them right now. I want to shift things to golf. Tomorrow it's the Wyndham Championship at Sedgefield Country Club. I was on Adam Gold earlier today, and I mentioned that a couple of people had offered for me to watch the tournament from their backyards, which just so happened to be on the Sedgefield Country Club course, which then led to us getting a phone call. I think her name is Elizabeth, saying, hey, how about you guys come to our backyard? I'm fielding offers. I'm not allowed to go into Sedgefield in a media capacity. Obviously, fans aren't going to be there. So I'm open to going into somebody's backyard. I'll wear a mask. I might even bring some brews. We'll figure something out there. Robert's fielding those calls at 336-777-1600, by the way. There are 4 golfers I'm keeping a close eye on at the Wyndham. Number one, there's the guy I'm rooting for. That's Harold Varner III. Me and Robert, we're East Carolina guys, and he's just incredibly likable. I've known Harold for about a decade now. He's gotten so close. He's become likable and a name in golf because he's African-American and has spoken out on social issues in a way you don't really see that often in golf. In a way that Tiger Woods hasn't really been touching the subject, let's say, during the summer. And I'm not faulting Tiger for that, but I respect what Harold is doing. Likeable guy, gotten close. 11 top 10s, no wins on the PGA Tour, been in the PGA Tour for a little while now. But he's a North Carolina guy, from Gastonia. As I mentioned, he's an ECU Pirate, proud to let you know it. He's the only golfer to be repped by the Jordan brand, which I think is a really neat thing too. I'd love to see him get his first win, but I asked him earlier today, this is usually a course you call home. You love this course. There are two North Carolina events generally every year on the PGA Tour. Is it going to feel like that if there are no fans in the gallery rooting you on? Is it going to have that home flavor playing in the Wyndham? And this is how Harold responded.
Most certainly. I think there's a girl that lives on number 4, Macy, who's going to East Carolina. There's always a tent on 15 that is the East Carolina tent. So, yeah, it feels like home. I drove up this morning. It took me about an hour and 30 minutes. It definitely feels like home. I'm in my own car. So, yeah, most certainly.
So, Harold Varner, he's the one I'm rooting for. Here's the guy I think it's going to win, and it shouldn't surprise you. My pick is Webb Simpson. He's the betting favorite, and rightfully so. Here are his finishes the last 3 years in the Wyndham. He finished second last year, tied for second 2 years ago, and he finished third in 2017. He's Mr. North Carolina. Every corner of the state can claim him. Lives in Charlotte, grew up in Raleigh, went to Broughton High School, Wake Forest golfing family. He named one of his children Wyndham. So Mr. North Carolina is my pick. And it's not wishful thinking. You see the results there. He's had a tremendous year, has success when the tournaments are close to home. He won in South Carolina at Hilton Head a few months ago. So that's my pick. I'm going with Webb to win. But he's not the best bet. You're not going to make a lot of money. I think you get 10-1 odds for Webb. That's not nearly good enough for golf. If you're only getting 10-1 odds, I don't care if it's Tiger in his prime. That's not something you should be betting on. Here are the smart bets, if that's something you're interested in, for the Wyndham. Number one, it's Rory Sabatini. That might not be a name to many people, but if you follow the Wyndham, this guy's always high up on the leaderboard, it seems like. 90-1 odds. 90! Top six finishes. Two of the last 3 years. In the last month, three top 20s on the PGA Tour made the cut in San Francisco. So I like Sabatini as a smart bet. Maybe to sprinkle some lettuce on, Robert. That's what we could do.
Put some money on it.
Is it 100% time, 100% of the time somebody says sprinkle a little lettuce on something? That guy's a jerk face.
I've only heard you use it, but yes, in this sense, it does make you a jerk face.
Last golfer I'm keeping an eye on, it's also my second smart bet, Billy Horschel. 33-1 odds, 49. The last 4 years at the Wyndham Championship, he shot 49 under combined. So he's shooting a hot stick at the Wyndham, and I think that's a smart bet. So that's what I'm keeping an eye on. Play's going to start tomorrow. It is the Triad's crown jewel. Since the ACC tournament doesn't come to Greensboro every year anymore, I think this year was the first one in 5 years and we didn't even really get a tournament, it's become the Wyndham Championship. And this tournament has now transformed into something bigger with the Wyndham Rewards Top 10. We love it. We wish there'd be fans there, but we're going to try and cover it the best we can being here in the studio. But at the same time, if you got a backyard on the golf course, me and Robert will be there.
Want to become a real sports fan? Leave it right here.
It turns everyone it touches into raging psychotics.
All things sports. Well, sometimes. On The Drive with Josh Graham.
After the 4-3 double overtime loss in Game 1 in Toronto earlier today, there are some Carolina Hurricane fans saying, oh, it's just Game 1. We nearly won it. We should feel really optimistic moving forward about this full best of 7 series. I am not one of those people. I'm a Canes fan, but I am not optimistic right now because the number one thing you didn't want to see happen with Boston, which was the best team in the regular season until things got halted 5 months ago, is this top line to be back. You're looking at Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand. You don't want those dudes to get going, and that's exactly what happened in game one. Jacob Slavin couldn't get a stick on a pass. Marchand sent it across the goal mouth. It ended up in the Bruins' goal, and then Bergeron had a dandy in double overtime. David Krejci even getting involved in it as well. So the Bruins getting off, that's not a good thing for Carolina, big picture speaking, because it looks like the Boston Bruins are back. They poked the bear, so to speak. 336-777-1600. Mike Edelkin wants in on the Canes. Mike, your thoughts on game one, what are they?
I thought that the goal that was scored by Boston in the second period should have been disallowed. I didn't know you could knock the puck out of the goalie's mitt when he was freezing.
Agreed
it.
Completely. The explanation, just to hold you up real quick, the NHL put out there saying that since Mrazek actually played the puck, air quotes, the hand pass was disallowed, the puck was jarred free, and then the goal was scored. It was a BS goal. That's what it was. It was BS. You can continue.
Okay. I'm not quite ready to say we're in trouble yet, but that was disappointing because, you know, Boston has not won any of the four games they played, including their exhibition game, until today. And if they get going tomorrow's the big game. If they get going and beat the Canes tomorrow, then I think it's going to be time to worry.
Yeah. All right. And real quickly, what do you got in terms of broadcasters that you want to tune in for and those that when you hear them come on, you just want to turn off the TV?
Well, Gus Johnson is one I love to hear because he always makes the game interesting and fun. And at the end, he gets so excited over big plays. I really like listening to him. And I'm going to give Dickie V another try after his interview with you today. But I'd gotten where I couldn't stand listening to Dick Vitale because he always talks about Duke, even though Duke may not be playing.
Yeah.
Or at least he used to be like that.
Yeah.
Enjoy that interview today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Appreciate the call, Mike. Yeah, I appreciate the call. I'll add this on the Dickie V front. This is my theory. It's always been my theory on Dick Vitale. I've even said it on this show. The only reason people think Dick Vitale loves Duke and they call him Dookie V is because Duke is the most hateable program in college basketball. Dickie V, he's positive about everybody. There isn't anybody who's as positive in the media as Dick Vitale is who is polarizing. Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, you name it. They're loud. They're negative at points. They're saying things that are bad about your team. Dick Vitale doesn't do that. He pumps up Carolina, and he pumps up Michigan State, and he pumps up Indiana, and he's best friends with Bob Knight. He's pumping up Duke. You only notice the Duke stuff because you hate Duke. That's it. Duke, they're hated, so people think Dick Vitale loves Duke because he says nice things about Duke, and you don't recognize it when he's saying nice things about your team because you always think that the broadcaster should say nice things about your team. Where were we? Carolina Hurricanes? Oh, yeah. I'm looking at what Rod Brindamore had to say about the officiating. He said this, and this is according to Sarah Sivian's Twitter. Quote, the guy comes to me and says it's either goalie interference because he has it and the guy knocked it out of his hand, or it's a glove hand pass. You got to pick one. Either way, it's no goal. What? You have to tell me what the call is. He's telling me to pick one. They just didn't get the bounces. That's a terrible call. Canes, they're just getting shafted. Boston, they get the bounces that Carolina got in the first round. It's why I'm concerned. You're talking about Boston's record. They're 0-4, including the exhibition. I don't care about that because Boston didn't have anything on the line. They were thinking, we know we're the best team in the NHL. Let's get through these first handful of games. We're not worried about home ice advantage at this level. So whoever we play, we end up playing. And it just so happened to be the Carolina Hurricanes. And now we're seeing the Boston Bruins that were 6 points better than everybody in the NHL. Looking just that in game one. Here's the other reason I'm discouraged. We learned that Justin Williams and Vatanen pregame we're not going to play 10 minutes before puck drop. This is the part I dislike about where we're at, where reporters can't follow the teams and cover them properly. Canes have been off for a week. I didn't know anything about Justin Williams and Vatanen being hurt, did you? I didn't know. That would affect my viewpoint on this series. I don't know where they're at. And I don't know what Brindamore said about Williams post-game and Vatanen, but why would I believe anything he has to say if it wasn't put out publicly until puck drop? I mean, it's good that you're getting Dougie Hamilton back, but I would like there to be some reporting on where some of these injuries are at and who's going to be playing. Because if they've missed a week or the Canes haven't played in a week and those guys are out for game one, who's to say they come back at all? Who's to say it isn't significant? Or when they come back, it's not going to be altering Carolina further. So I'm really discouraged after game one. I really am. We got BDOT, who's going to join us in 10 minutes. I got breaking news into the studio here. The Boston Celtics have given Brad Stevens a contract extension, according to Jeff Goodman. No terms have been announced. He just finished his seventh year in the NBA. Tough news. Tough break for Carolina fans out there, right? just kidding. Speaking of the NBA, big headline today that there are going to be teams exiting, so you can have close family members come into the bubble. That's pretty good. I think Stephen A. Smith had an idea that this was coming because before the announcement, he was on First Take addressing Jaylen Brown's comments where he said mental health is something that you need to consider with all the isolation and such. This is how Stephen A. Smith responded.
Loneliness. It's very, very simple. You better let somebody come up in there and see him. You understand what I'm saying to you? I'm just being real. Somebody got to say it.
Like a doctor, Stephen A.? What do you mean?
It's that simple. Look, they got to let somebody up in there and see it.
Stephen A. Smith is saying that there needs to be some accompaniment for some of these players. There needs to be some companionship.
Conjugal visits.
That's right, conjugal visits. That's the way it was put. But in the memo, the NBA said, you must prove there's a long-standing relationship for non-family members to enter the bubble.
How are you going to prove that? Like, hey, I got text messages from 2017.
Listen, look at my Hinge conversation. Look at my Tinder. We've been talking for about 2 months, okay? Like, if that's not enough evidence, I mean, come on. Adam, please let her in. Come on. Please. This is amazing. I want to picture NBA players who do not have wives trying to justify having women come into the bubble. We're not married. We're not engaged. But man, we're serious. Man, when we were in high school, when I was in high school, we dated on and off for a long time.
Say you love her right now. Say you love her.
They're like, I loathe her. Does that count?
If you say you love her right now.
Did you say love or loathe? I loathe her. Got it. Okay. I don't want to say any specific player's name.
She's like, he said he loved me so I could come into bubble, girl.
Commissioner, are you familiar with the song I'm in love with the stripper? Well, my name's Lou Williams and... or James Harden.
They both frequent those establishments.
Yes, they do. Those are the two I feel comfortable saying. I don't feel comfortable doing this to anybody else. Just Lou Will and James Harden.
You don't want to blindside somebody like Kyle Korver. He loves the dancers.
Listen, maybe someone tries to pull it off, say, this is my sister.
Okay? Oh, no.
Her last name changed.
No.
Her last name changed.
You can't do that.
Don't we look alike?
No, this is not a Joe Dirt scenario. We're not going to do this.
You're my sister.
Boban is like, this is my sister. She's like, Boban, this girl is 5'10". We're not letting her in.
That's fantastic. Also a really good segue. Really good segue to BDOT's Grammar School. I don't know where he is on vacation, but he agreed to join us and give me five words to see if I can figure out the definition of them and what we call, again, BDOT's Grammar School. Next.
All right, let's go.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And 3, 2, 1, go.
The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
I feel really badly about what we're about to do. Vacation is a time where you shouldn't have to worry about any element of work, and we're disrupting BDOT's vacation. It's why we weren't on earlier this week on our IG Live. That's the story I'm going with, rather than I just forgot. But he's joining us somewhere. I have no idea where, because he wants to give me his five grammar school words. BDOT, where are you? How are you?
Well, I was doing fine, Josh. I'm on an island. I'm chilling. I actually had to pay extra for the Wi-Fi to do this bit with you guys today. So I'm going to charge you for this, okay?
Are you in the NBA bubble? Like, are you considered somebody who is not casual with an NBA player? Did Chris Paul say, hey, this guy's family, he needs to go in the bubble with me?
No. I'm actually nowhere exciting, Josh. I'm really in Charlotte in my driveway in the car right now, staying away from the kids. So this is really a vacation from my vacation. So thank you very much, actually.
All right. Let's dive right in. It's time for grammar school.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking.
In high school, he didn't play sports, but he did wear a helmet.
And just when you think it can't get any worse.
My English teacher wanted to flunk me in junior high.
Damn.
Thanks a lot. Next semester, I'll be 35.
Josh is going to attempt to learn BDOT's vernacular.
I'm from the old school. I got a little street knowledge. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
It's time for BDOT's Grammar School.
Okay, BDOT. It's time for you to give me the words. I'm losing a lifeline, so Robert, I genuinely need you to help me this week.
Yeah,
if I need
it.
Help.
Always. I'm always helping you.
All right, Dot, you take it away.
All right, I'm ready, but I would like to know at the end of this, Josh, why people are hitting me up confused that Bradford is Sarah Bradford's last name, but that's neither here nor there.
There are a lot of people, I mentioned it on the radio 30 minutes ago, that Sarah Bradford is her first name, not her last. And all of a sudden, people's worlds are wrecked about it because Robert wanted to point out that Robbie Anderson is spelled R-O-B-B-Y, yet people say his spelling is R-O-B-B-I-E. They misspell that all the time. It's an issue that Robert had.
I never knew that. I've only spelled Robbie R-O-B-B-Y, but I was equally confused that Sarah Bradford was her entire first name and Bradford was not her last name. I'm talking about it blew my mind. And you tried to make me feel like I was in the minority. So it is great to see that there are other people who are like-minded as myself.
Did you just figure this out or did we have this conversation?
No, we've had this conversation before because I remember being so confused. Like, Sarah Bradford, because I called my wife Carla Jackson by her maiden last name, Carla Jackson, all the time. And I thought that we shared something there. But no, Sarah Bradford is her first name.
I do that all the time, so I understand people who would get confused by it. But this is her favorite segment, by the way, and I'm sure she's enjoying this right now. Let's sidestep that for now and get to the first word.
Okay. First word is a review word. What does TTG stand for, Josh?
TTG. I was fully expecting WAP today.
Are you gonna? Yeah, well, I hope we have no WAP in here. Are you gonna use this lifeline this early?
TTG.
What is that noise?
I'm thinking. I'm confused. I
think about the review words. Try to like sound it out in your head. What do you think? The T's are going to be hard because they're back-to-back. But the G, what do you think the G is?
There's a lot of things that the G could be. Could be go. Could be, I don't know. Robert, help me out. I need it.
All right, here you go. Here's your help. That G word is go.
Oh, come on, man. I just said that. I just said that. Robert, I just said that.
Trained to go.
Okay, trained to go. There we go. We're off to a good start. Trained to go, but I already used my lifeline, and I'm feeling like it's going to get tougher.
It might get tougher for you. Next word, I'm going to go with a new word, but this is a phrase. What does it mean if someone says, you can get it?
We've never heard that.
That means somebody is attractive. No, you can get it. That's what that means.
That definitely means you can get the buns. Absolutely, Josh Graham. Congratulations.
Thank you for that. All right, we're off to a 2-0 start. If I get this one right, then I've won the round. So I got a feeling it's going to be the most difficult one you have.
86.
Oh.
86. The number 86. What does 86 mean, Josh Graham?
86. There is no highway 86.
No.
86.
You've heard this in movies before. I don't even know if this is such an urban thing as it is just a term.
Really? Really?
If I think it's the right thing, like if I'm correct with this, I never associated this with the urban vernacular. I thought this was just like a thing.
And see, like there's a lot of urban movies, excuse me, there are a lot of urban movies that I've been in or that I've seen where they definitely use this phrase a lot. So I was familiar with that.
Yeah, maybe that's where I've heard it from.
Does 86 mean get out of here? I need to get out of here. Like I need to go. 86 down the road. Is that what that means?
No, it doesn't mean you need to get out of here. It means somebody's getting out of here, though. It means to end them, to take something out, to take something away, to 86 something, to kill somebody, to get them out of here.
Like we were going to talk to so-and-so and so-and-so, but that got 86 because of time constraints.
I understand. All right. I got one wrong, two right, two left to go.
Review word. Review word, Josh Graham. What does it mean to bounce back?
Oh, it means to rally. It means, hey, you just took an L. Now you need to clear your mind, have instant amnesia, get back in there, win. Come on now. Bounce back means to rally.
That is correct, Josh Graham.
Woo!
That is correct, Josh Graham. It does mean to bounce back after falling out, to come back after falling off. You have gotten three correct. You have gotten three correct, but let's see what you can do with this last word, Josh. What does it mean when something hits different? It hits different.
I've used this before. I hope I'm using it correctly. Okay. Hits different. Is it kind of like something... something getting brought up that you had a different feeling towards before, and now it's kind of like the inverse of that? Like, for example, like Facebook, you know, when you watch The Social Network, it's a great movie at first because Facebook's a new thing, but if you watch it now, it hits different because we know a lot more things about Facebook and privacy that aren't so awesome. You know, it's something that hasn't aged well. It hits different. But I bet it can work conversely, too. Am I on to something here?
I mean, you just give broad definitions and then keep describing, so it could... Yeah, this could partially mean what I'm talking about.
I just gave...
Give like a one-sentence definition. That's what this is.
I just put it in a sentence.
You put it in 20 sentences. What do you think hits different means? Right here. This is what it means.
You thought something was one way, and it turned out to be something different, or it feels different now.
It's up to you, Dot. I wouldn't give it to him, but it's up to you.
You wouldn't give him that for hits different, Robbie?
That's like half of it. That's like part of it.
Give me a sentence. Give me your definition. A sentence. I feel like we're saying we're going to say the same thing, but what exactly do you define it as?
I don't define it as this thing in the past now does this because I know something about it. It's like, okay, eating this food right here in my mom's house, that hits different than eating food at someone else's house. It's a totally different feeling brought on by a unique experience.
As the final say here, I think both of you are correct. I think both of you are correct. It's an experience that it conveys one emotion, but then it may convey a different emotion than was previously experienced. You know what I'm saying? Like, you experienced it one time and it was one way, but it hits different now. For example, Kanye West music, it hits different now that he's lost his scruples.
Oh, hey mama, totally different.
Yeah, Mike tweets totally in. Different. Mike tweets in. There is a Highway 86. It's 86. It's in Chapel Hill.
Oh,
I might have to check on that.
Now we're learning something.
All right, appreciate so that. You gave it to me.
You got it. You're four, yeah, out,
four
of five.
Out of five. I'll give you this, yes. There we go. All right. Thanks so much for the call, B Dot. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, which sounds like it's more of a staycation. And we'll talk to you next week.
Mind your business, Josh. See you next week.
There you go. That's B-Dot telling me to mind my own business, and we'll try to do
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Dot. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy the rest. Hey, you got it, dude.
Want to do
mic
the rest of
on.
This phone call?
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to keep my mic on the rest of this phone call. All right. See you, Dot. Appreciate it.
Yeah. You going to keep that thing on?
Yeah, I'll keep it on the whole show now.
All right. Now I have to do a tease with all of these here.
You want me to stall? I learned something about 86 while we were sitting there.
You want to check for sure if Highway 86...
Well, how did that even come up? Who said anything about Highway 86?
That was me. I said, I don't think there is a Highway 86. And
yeah,
Mike said
there is.
Yeah,
it runs through the east or west side of Durham.
Okay. This is it. I think I got the... I think I can do this.
So you don't want to know where 86 came from?
No, where did 86 come from?
Kitchen staff used it. So if something, they ran out of food, they would be like, 86 the sea bass. We're out of sea bass. That's where it started.
All right. After a difficult week, college football, it needs to bounce back. Because Appalachian State, when you look at this roster, man, they can get it. They're trained to go is another way to put it. I mean, you're losing a couple of conferences, the Pac-12, the Big 12, you know, they just 86th out of the season. And without them, I'm going to be honest, the season, it's going to hit different. But I'll tell you why, with great changes comes great opportunity for App State next on The Drive.
Here's your mic check.
Check, mic check.
Test, check, check, check.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Full disclosure, let me say this up front. I don't have many teams that I root for that I'm emotionally attached to. Never had one with ACC basketball despite growing up in the state of North Carolina. I was a little emotionally attached to the Panthers when I was younger, but not so much since I started covering the Panthers. But full disclosure, I root for the Hurricanes. I'm emotionally attached to the Hurricanes and the Baltimore Orioles, which is an unfortunate thing, admittedly. So I don't know if this is some of my bias seeping in, but I feel like the Carolina Hurricanes are getting shafted a bit. I really do. And I'm not just talking about that goal that probably should have been disallowed that Rob Brindamore is upset about in the 4-3 double overtime loss to the Bruins. I'm still fuming at the fact that Carolina has to play Boston in the first place because, quite frankly, the Hurricanes were one of the two teams to vote against the format, the 2014 format, having to play the Rangers. They proved they didn't belong on the ice with New York in the first place. And on top of that, who says that the three games you play in a round robin should be valued so much that the first 70 games don't matter, where the Boston Bruins were 6 points better than every single team in the NHL. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And to help me make sense of it, I welcome in Luke DeCock, who I respect a lot, award-winning columnist from the Raleigh News and Observer. So I presented my case there. Should Carolina be playing Boston right now, really?
Well, I mean, they knew the ground. I mean, they may not have liked it, but they knew the ground rules going into it, and Boston played quite terribly in the round robin. This is how it shakes out. You know, yes, there was a great chunk of the regular season played, but it wasn't a normal conclusion to that season. Not everybody played the teams they were supposed to play. And I think we all understand that, given the circumstances, the NHL did what it thought was best to A, garner some interest, and B, the round robin, giving the teams that weren't going to play in those first 3 to 5 games something to play for. And so those were the stakes. So, you know, I think the Hurricanes knew the ground rules. You know, Boston, Washington, Philadelphia, does it really make that big of a difference? You knew you were going to get one of those teams. And you know, the reality is you were going to have to beat 1, 2, or maybe all 3 of those teams to get to the Stanley Cup Finals anyway. So as Rod Brindamore said the other day, you might as well deal with Boston first and try to exorcise some ghosts and some demons from last year. And the Hurricanes most emphatically did not do that today.
There are two schools of thought to react to Game 1. The first school of thought is you had a call that didn't go your way. You lost in double overtime. This is going to be a really long, close series. Or the second school of thought is the Canes haven't exercised their demons. The problem with the Bruins that nobody in the trio in their top line scored in the round robin games seems to have been remedied with Patrice Bergeron scoring the overtime winner. We saw what Pastrnak and Marchand were capable of doing on an early goal. Then, of course, we learned right before face-off, Justin Williams isn't in the lineup after a week off. Sammy Vatanen in the same way. I get you have Dougie Hamilton back, but how concerned are you about the Canes after losing Game 1?
Well, there's no question the Bruins deserve to win that game. The Hurricanes did not play well. They know it. The Bruins did to the Hurricanes what the Hurricanes normally do to other teams. They pinned them down. They piled up shots. They forced the goalie to make big saves. It was a role reversal. And you know, I think it was very different last year than Game 1, where the Hurricanes played pretty well through two periods, then got into penalty trouble. The Bruins power play got cooking in the third period. And the Hurricanes ended up complaining about the officiating when they should have been complaining about themselves and the way they threw that game away in the third period. The difference is this year they're still complaining about the officiating, probably more justifiably than last year, but they're also complaining about themselves and are fully aware they didn't play well enough. You know, that where that hurts you in a 7-game series is you like to steal the games where you don't play well. And the Hurricanes had a chance to win a game where they didn't play well. You're in second overtime, anything can happen. That is one you feel like slipped away in a very different way than you feel like Game 1 slipped away last year. The one constant between the two is concern about the officiating. And, you know, Rod Brindamore and I talked after the game, after his Zoom call, and he was furious about the no-goal call. And not necessarily the call itself, but the way that it was handled with him and the two officials, Chris Lee and Francis Charron. Where they basically wouldn't tell him which one of the two things he needed to challenge, whether it was a hand pass or a goaltender interference, and he had to guess, and he guessed the wrong one. In the NHL, you lose that challenge because the officials admitted they screwed up a different part of the play, that Peter Mrazek possessed the puck and the Bruins knocked it out of his glove when there should have been a whistle, and they score, and the Bruins get a power play out of it. Now, you know, none of that ended up mattering. Brock McGinn steals the puck, D-to-D pass, goes down, scores. It's 2-2, fine. No harm, no foul. You know, puck don't lie, all of that. But I think why Brindamore is so angry is he senses, and this is him talking, not me, that the Hurricanes are not going to get the benefit of the doubt in this series from the officials. And you saw that in the first overtime. Brady Shea's stick gets slashed out of his hands and broken. That is a textbook, like the puck over the glass, you have to call it penalty. And then Shea goes down at the other end, dives to deflect the puck away and gets called for a trip. That is not a very debatable penalty. I don't think that's a penalty. I think he got the puck with his stick. But there's no question that the Hurricanes should have had a power play before that, and they didn't get it because the officials swallowed their whistle. I thought Chris Lee in particular was terrible, but I don't think you can count on good officiating in the NHL. Like, that's not like, oh my God, the ref was terrible, the Hurricanes, you know, they got the shaft. No, I mean, the officiating's bad a lot of the time. But I think you can expect that calls that need to be made, like the flash on Shea, should be called. And I think that's why Brindamore was so sensitive about the way things were handled on that, the terrible mishandled goal review by the NHL. You know, NHL stands for nothing happens logically. And that was a great example of why Mario Lemieux once called it the garage league. Only in the NHL do you challenge something and lose the challenge because the league actually screwed up something else. You know, it's like trying to play whack-a-mole with the NHL. So that, I think, is the most important thing for the Hurricanes, as much so as getting back on their game, which, okay, you can understand after sitting around for 7 days and an extra night, you might have a little rust on your game. But you can't let the officials and let the Bruins get in your head the way that they were last year. And I think that's as much as playing a better game. I think the Hurricanes will play better in game two. Quite frankly, they can't play much worse and still be in the game. But I think they will play better having had the experience of getting back into action. They played better in the third period, especially at the end. But I do think that they need to be careful. You know, we saw what happened with Justin Williams last year, who is as level-headed a player as there is in the game. This has happened to them before, and they need to make sure they keep an even keel with the officiating. And you know, the Bruins were obviously trying to bully Andrei Svechnikov today. They were trying to get in his grill. They're trying to rattle him. They need to have the sand, as I wrote the other day, to handle the Bruins' bullying. So that, to me, is as important for the Hurricanes going into game two as anything that they do structurally, tactically, in terms of execution.
Hold up. Was Rod Brind'Amour told that the Canes aren't old enough to get that call?
That is a football thing, not a hockey thing.
Luke DeCock is on Twitter, at Luke DeCock. Read his stuff in the pages of The Observer. I am interested in what's happening with college sports right now. You're somebody who's really plugged in with the ACC. How surprised or unsurprised were you that the ACC pushed on after the Big Ten and Pac-12's announcement?
I'm not surprised at all. In fact, I kind of have tweeted several times that is what I expected to happen. You know, that when in the spring in March with basketball, the ACC was completely unprepared and flat-footed and very awkward in its decision making. Not very nimble, very ponderous, and ended up looking stupid, I thought, quite frankly, as other leagues acted more quickly and more decisively, which with what at the time seemed a pretty obvious course of action. It's different with football. There's been more time. There's been a lot more time for presidents to talk, for ADs to talk, to develop a consensus, which is the way the ACC always likes to do things. And the ACC, when it announced its 10 plus 1 schedule, went into it with the idea, and the SEC did the same thing. We have given ourselves a month, right? We pushed things back to mid-September, maybe even late September if we go 10 plus 0. We've given ourselves a chance to follow this along, to see if things change, to see if things get better. You know, the Pac-12's big issue was immediate point of access testing. Like, we need quicker testing that isn't out there right now. There may be a breakthrough that may be available on September 20th, where you can, you know, take a saliva tab and stick it in a machine and it pops up green or red or gives you a number of what your viral load is. The ACC is leaving that door open. Now, between you and me and your audience, do I think that's going to change? Hell no, I don't think that's going to change. I think the ACC is going to end up canceling fall sports just like the Pac-12 and Big Ten. But the ACC has given itself a month of runway before it has to do that. You've got the athletes back on campus. You can see how they interact with students. Maybe it will go really well. Maybe it won't. I don't think it will, but maybe it will go well. You've gotten through that wave of initial test, positive tests when athletes came back to campus at UNC and Clemson and other places. So, you know, let's take this month, see where it goes. If there's a time to cancel when you get closer. And that gives you more time, which for the ACC is a huge consideration, to think about basketball. And can you play basketball if there's no football? Can you play basketball if there is football? They bought themselves some time, and they are going to use it.
Luke, before we let you go, we got the Wyndham Championship starting tomorrow. I know that's an event you always look forward to. We always looked forward to it because we get to broadcast our show underneath a tiki hut at Margaritaville. Not so much this year. But what's the thing that you're most interested to watch as the PGA Tour returns to North Carolina?
I wrote about this in today's paper, but for us in Raleigh in the Triangle, it's Akshay Bhatia, the 18-year-old from Wake Forest, who's playing in his sixth PGA Tour event, still looking to make a cut, but comes in off a mini tour win, his first professional win, has been palling around and getting advice from Phil Mickelson, just went and leased a car, so he's under a little more financial pressure, even with his big Callaway endorsement deal. Just a kid who hits the ball a mile, has all the shots in his bag, didn't putt very well when he got out on tour this fall, used the pandemic pause to retool his putting stroke, has putted better since then, is putting up lower numbers now on the mini tours, which is different, but still. And I think has a real chance to make the cut this week. You know, it's It would be crazy if he won, obviously, but the Wyndham has a long tradition. I think 7 in the last 13 years of guys getting their first tour win at Sedgefield. And if Fatia were to somehow win, he'd get full membership and go right into the FedEx Cup playoffs, which would be an amazing story. He has to finish solo second to get special temporary member status, which wouldn't get him in the FedEx Cup, but would probably get him into the 12 or 15 or 20 tournaments next year. It's a low status, but it's not a bad one. And that's unlikely, but I'm fascinated to see on a course he knows well, just like Webb and Dr. Edmund and all the other guys from the Triangle who have played Sedgefield their whole lives. Very fascinated to see how the 18-year-old does against the pros in as close to a home game as he's going to get. It's going to be weird out there with no fans. I was walking the course a little bit yesterday. You know, that they have the beach set up on 16, but and 15 and 16, but you know, I don't think it's going to be quite the party it usually is.
Yeah, it's crazy to think you're talking about that run of guys getting their first career win at the Wyndham Championship. It's still crazy to me that Harold Varner has gotten so close. Another North Carolina guy still does not have a PGA Tour win. Top 10 finish. I think he's had 11 top 10 finishes in his career so far. Maybe he's a guy as well that potentially could break through, but Webb is the big favorite right now. Is there somebody you look at, you circle and say, it just makes too much sense, this guy, someone to go with the championship?
I think Webb is so good at Sedgefield that, you're hard to look past Webb. And he's playing, he's having a great year, obviously. You know, the other guy, when you talk about Harold Varner, I wouldn't be shocked to see him win. I mentioned him a little bit earlier, is Doc Redmond, is from Raleigh, won the U.S. Amateur, played at Clemson. He's had a decent couple years full-time on the tour. It wouldn't shock me if he put a couple good rounds together. I think he's got 5 or 6 top 25s this year. He's made most of the cuts in the tournaments he's played in. He's a guy who, is going to win on tour eventually, without question. And, maybe this is his time.
It's good to hear from you, Luke. Excited for the rest of the week. The Wyndham starting tomorrow. The Hurricanes playing at 8:00. Fingers crossed tomorrow night. Didn't think that the team postponing from North Carolina yesterday would be the Carolina Hurricanes, but that's what we saw turn out. Luke, it's good to hear from you. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Josh.
There you go. He's on Twitter @LukeDeCock. Read his stuff. newsandobserver.com and in the pages of The Observer.